Hello everyone and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host Dennis Omer, we're joined by my co-host DeFi Dude and Lester in Brighton. So our first news item regards Uniswap, and I don't know what's happening, but the SEC, which is the US Securities and Exchange Commission, has decided to investigate Uniswap Labs. Now, Uniswap Labs isn't Uniswap. You know, Uniswap is, as everyone knows, by far the largest decentralized exchange out there. They're the most popular one. They do over $1 billion in volume. And Uniswap Labs is more like the team that write smart contracts, you know, see what kind of new innovation they can do. And it's important to kind of differentiate Uniswap Labs from Uniswap, because at the end of the day, the SEC is coming after Uniswap Labs and not Uniswap. They can't really come after Uniswap anyways, just a set of smart contracts that have already been deployed. And if anyone wanted to stop the Uniswap smart contracts, they would pretty much have to do a 50% attack on the miners. And I don't know how you would do it. It's almost impossible, pretty much, to swap any smart contract once it's deployed. The Uniswap team don't have any admin keys over it. Now, maybe this news shouldn't be too surprising to us, because just last month, the SEC chairman, Gary Gensler, said that his agency could regulate DeFi projects. And he said especially those projects that do reward participants with valuable tokens or other incentive mechanisms. And they said that they could be regulated no matter how decentralized they are. Now, good luck with that. As we mentioned, how do you stop smart contracts? I'm not sure. But the Uniswap Labs team itself, they actually said they're committed to complying with the laws and regulations governing their industry and providing information to regulators. I remember we covered news about how they weren't even listing some tokens on the front end. They're US-based, and they've been trying to do everything by the book. But I guess that's the beauty of decentralized finance, right? It's just because of this nature that we're not beholden to some overzealous regulator in some country on the other side of the world. It's truly global and permissionless, and it can't be stopped. So let's see what comes out of this. I don't think anything's going to come out of it. Obviously, Uniswap smart contracts can never be stopped. So DeFi Dude, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, kind of similar thoughts to, like, I guess what the general crowd is saying and thinking. It's obvious, you know, and I guess important to remember that these are smart contracts. You can't just go in and say, hey, we're going to regulate this smart contract. We're going to have the Uniswap developers stop this or that. You know, and we have discussed it, like you mentioned before, when they've stopped certain tokens from being traded. This is all on the front end, right? This isn't something that, you know, on the actual smart contract, it's preventing people or anything like that. So, you know, it is important to remember that this Uniswap itself, the protocol, it really can't be stopped. You know, maybe there could be a newer version that's more regulatory friendly. That doesn't mean the previous one would ever go away if the users keep using it. There's no limits there. So, you know, while I think this is, like, obviously a little negative to DeFi and crypto, it really isn't a surprise. You have these public facing teams, let alone Uniswap in the US. They're obviously going to be, you know, hit up by the SEC and, like, you know, want more information or whatever, see how they can work together and that kind of stuff. So especially, yeah, just being in the US. But like you said, too, they've always played it by the book. You know, I don't think this is anything really to worry about. At worst, you know, I think it might be a front end issue, which we've already seen them tackling in the past with, you know, delisting certain tokens and stuff. But end of the day, you'll always be able to access the Uniswap smart contracts regardless of what regulators do or say or try and stop. So
yeah, it might even be bullish in the sense that you can try to come after smart contracts. You can prove to anyone that's impossible. So then there's more confidence in this whole system. As you said, the front end is a whole different matter, but then you have stuff like IPFS. You have decentralized solutions for that as well. So let's see how that plays out. Now, our next news item is actually something that usually we leave to the second part of the podcast. We love talking about NFTs, but because, like, my Twitter feed has been inundated with news about this item, we thought we'd bring it up. So DeFi Dude, tell us what's happening.
Yeah. If you've spent any time on crypto Twitter, chances are you're already somewhat aware of this, but this is the Loot NFT project. You know, this week it kind of took crypto Twitter and I'm sure other different outlets for crypto by storm. It's known as Loot or Loot for Adventurers. And the project was initially launched by Dom, the creator of Blipmaps, which is, you know, another fully on-chain NFT project, and actually just today had a sale for like over $800,000 for one of their Blipmaps. So that's really cool. But Loot, unlike a lot of, you know, the NFTs that we've been seeing and discussing and, you know, sharing all over the place where it's like kind of represented by art or a picture or that kind of thing, this Loot is actually just a list of words. And up front, there was a lot of jokes, like it's literally just words. You know, they're not random words, like dictionary words, of course. For Loot specifically, they're more like mythical fantasy, kind of like something you'd see out of like an RPG video game or MMO, that kind of stuff. And each loot bag is a character equipment loadout. So, you know, you've got like a helmet, a shirt, pants, shoes, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's really cool, the composability, which is also what caught a lot of people's attention, is just that there is no picture associated with it. So you have this NFT, but you can, you know, make your own. Say you have a game where you want to allow loot NFTs to be used. Well, if you're the game creator, you can leave that graphical, whatever these items might look like, you can just leave it up to you, you know, your designers, whatever you want to do, or, you know, it's really, there's so many different ways you could take it. So that's what a lot of people, I guess, were interested in at first. And I mean, still are. It also led to a ton of derivatives though. So we've seen it kind of get out of hand the past couple days. You've got all different types of, you know, loot themed projects that aren't even associated with loot or like trying to work together or build the ecosystem. But you also do have these new projects that are like obviously building stuff on top of loot. They want to boost the loot ecosystem, build out the loot ecosystem, and, you know, a ton of top minds working on different stuff. Really cool to see. You know, there was also some crazy things like A-Gold or Adventurer Gold, which was an airdrop for any loot holders. And it's currently worth like over $50,000 just for holding one loot. And it, I guess it's like the currency of the loot ecosystem, or that's what the community adopted, and also the DAO token. You know, and there's been some controversy as well, of course, you know, with these shooting up in price. I think 15 ETH is the floor price for loot. You know, there's some people from loot holders who want the project to go one way, others that want it to go another way. So kind of clashing there a little bit, but, you know, it's kind of all part of the fun for projects that don't really have a specific direction, and it's, you know, it's in the hands of the community. So will definitely be interesting to see what they build out over the coming weeks, just because it is so community oriented and so basic, you know, just words. Like there's so many different ways you could take words. So yeah, it will just be really cool to see how this develops.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think what's interesting for me is just, this is just one application of the context of the concept. So they've said, okay, it's going to be adventure items, and it's more like a ground up where you're just providing the ingredients, and I guess it's the community or the team that's going to build out the game or just going to build out the ecosystem around it. But imagine what you can do for like similar concepts outside the context of an adventure game, maybe in finance, maybe in something else. So I think this kind of approach opens up a new space to what can be done with NFTs. I'm sure it's going to be combined with DeFi as well. I'm sure we're going to see a lot out of it. And I think what's really been crazy is the speed at which this thing has kind of grown, and how you, as you mentioned, there was already like copycats on different chains just springing out of nowhere. It must be like, you know, everyone is just clamoring to jump onto it, and it's only been around, I mean, how long has this been around? 48 hours, 72 hours, or is it more than that?
That's about a week, maybe a little less than a week, so just a few days.
A little less than a week, and yeah, and the hype cycle really blew up like three days ago, maybe, like 4 days max, right? And it's already worth a few hundred million. It's just like out of air that's happened. Wow, what crazy times. Now, another update that we do have to mention is that after months and months of waiting, we finally got Arbitrum. Arbitrum, the optimistic roll-up scaling solution that many of us have been waiting for. I think we've been talking about it, since the launch of this podcast, at least going 4 or 5 months back. And already there's been an explosion of activity. You can already go into L2Beats and see the hockey stick growth. We had already previously mentioned that there's so many different projects using it and being and preparing to deploy on it, including Reddit. That was something that we covered a few weeks ago, where they had decided to use Arbitrum's technology for their Ethereum-based community point system. And I saw in a tweet that there's already 400 projects that are being launched in Arbitrum. While they've just launched this, they also announced that they've raised $120 million in a Series B round led by Lightspeed Ventures and other investors, including Mark Cuban, Pantera, IOSG, Alameda Research. And this raise actually puts them at a $1.2 billion valuation. And that kind of shows you just how huge the expectations are from Arbitrum. And let's see, they've already hit the ground running. And we expect to see many projects deploy on there soon. And then we have one more giant. We have Optimism, we have Polygon, and now we have Arbitrum, and there's a few other ones. So it's pretty cool to see that all the major players are finally launching.
We've also got a quick update from ENS, which we actually covered last week, just briefly about their new support for DNS, allowing people to basically tie in like their .com domains and that kind of stuff to their ENS, which is really cool. But this week, just a smaller update is that Brantley shared on Twitter. He's the director of operations for ENS. He kind of gave just a little sneak peek or leak, I guess, of the new redesign for the ENS app, they call it. I mean, it's not technically a mobile app, but just, you know, desktop, whatever. So it's actually pretty cool. They allow you to make it more like a profile. So in the current design, it's a little confusing, I guess, especially for newcomers, even just how to like fully set up your domain. But you know, this new redesign obviously makes it much more friendly, I guess, for these new people. But what I thought was really cool is that they make it more like a profile. So, you know, you can add your nickname or location or bio. You can also tie in all these different social media accounts or like OpenSea, all your different addresses, even Bitcoin, Litecoin, different chains and that kind of stuff. You can incorporate your website, even email. So it's like, it really is like your internet profile almost. And it kind of reminds me of like what Threebox was, you know, a long time ago, where it's like you can have this on-chain profile with tons of data, you know, associated with it. So it's just gonna be really cool to see if like you'll be able to use this ENS profile, which now has so much more data than what it had a year ago. And maybe you could use it into like a decentralized social media website, like, you know, the one Aave has been teasing, or a new one that's built where it's like, that is your, you know, your wallet is your identity in some ways. So just cool to see this redesign. It's on Brantley's Twitter if you want to check that out.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool service that they're actually providing. And I remember the process used to be complicated. There's multiple steps, and I think they received a bit of criticism for that previously. And it's good to see that they're addressing that. And what you've just described sounds pretty cool. Something else we should also highlight is that we saw that MetaMask has grown over 1,800%. Just in the last year, which is super impressive. There was some tweet there that gave a statistics basically, and it was interesting. The top countries to use MetaMask was in first place, it was Philippines, and I'm guessing that's due to Axie Infinity's popularity there. And then there was the US, there was Vietnam, I think again probably Axie Infinity connection, UK, China, India, which is great to see because yeah, huge population means there's a lot of people using it in these countries. But at the end of the day, it's still a drop in the bucket when you think that 10 million users is still around 0.1% of the world population. So we still have a long way to go to mainstream adoption. And I think you had something about a QR scam or something going on regarding MetaMask. Is there something our listeners should be watching out for?
Yeah, definitely something that's been happening more recently, I guess. It's a scam that's not so apparent as your typical, like, you know, the one where they're faking to be MetaMask support and, oh, give us your 12 words, 24 words, you know. It's a little more smart, I guess you could call it. So MetaMask has this feature that basically allows you to show or display a QR code. And that QR code is actually the QR code you can use to restore that MetaMask account into another installation for MetaMask. So you're essentially exporting your private key as a QR code. But the thing is, it's not so apparent that like this is your everything. You know, like if someone gets this QR code, you lose it all. So the trick is that they're getting people to like screen share or like however they want to do it, social engineering you into screen sharing over Discord or whatever screen sharing service they might want you to use. And then they get you to just show that QR code even just for a second. You know, you might not even think you're displaying anything private or personal, and then that's all they need. We've had people lose multiple Bored Apes, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And even some people who, you know, they've been in the space, they're not completely new, but it's just kind of a novel attack vector. So it's just something to be careful about. Make sure you're never screen sharing your MetaMask. MetaMask support's never going to screen share with you or need to do that. So just always be very, very cautious about anything to do with your wallet and sharing anything.
Yeah, of course. I mean, people, scammers have gotten more sophisticated, and you always have to be on the ball. Like, you always have to be paying attention when you're interacting with your either cold wallet or hot wallet, whatever it is. Just double check everything. Just be suspicious of everything you're doing. Of course, it's not always easy to do. Even I sometimes when I use it, when I'm interacting with a smart contract and it says, okay, do you want to send this message? And you can't read the message. It's like some kind of bytecode. It's like numbers and characters, which have no meaning. You don't know if you're interacting properly. So always just be suspicious, double check everything. Don't fall for such scams, if, you know, especially with when barcodes are involved as well. So yeah, be careful with that.
Definitely. In other news, we do have some news about a new gaming accelerator. So we have covered tons of gaming and NFT stuff from various platforms already. However, this week, DeFi Alliance announced that they are launching their very own gaming accelerator. So basically, their aim is to help Web3 startups with game design, community building, more of that kind of stuff. And they will be including hands-on mentorship and demo days as well as talks from experts. This accelerator, it's going to run in cohorts, where each cohort's going to be a part of a three-week learning program with the curriculum focusing basically on tokenomics, liquidity, game design, and community building, arguably some of the most important few things when it comes to this stuff. And the cohorts will begin in early October, but if you are interested, make sure you apply before the September 19th application deadline, which as of recording is only 15 days away. So you know, if you want to get involved with this is a great thing to, you know, get started and kind of get your feet wet as far as like building out games, especially in the Web3 ecosystem, which is, you know, really, really big right now and just growing like crazy. So it's a great place to be if it's any interest to you.
Yeah. And these kind of initiatives are basically just adding more fuel to the innovation fire. They're enabling small teams, people maybe just fresh out of university, even like younger than that, just join the space, find mentorship. I saw the Polygon kind of fund as well for NFTs. There's a few other huge ones. And these teams, some of them have huge treasuries, so they can definitely afford this. And it's in their interest and everyone's interest for us to keep growing the innovation happening on the NFT space. And as we can see, it's expanding so fast, and that's really exciting to see. Now, actually, coming back to DeFi for a second, we also saw that Hats Finance had announced that they've just raised $3.5 million in a seed round to build what they described the future of cybersecurity in Web3. So this is basically a project which tries to decentralize the cybersecurity incentive mechanism, and it uses its HAT governance to create a bounty vault for project tokens. And these can basically be filled up with some kind of, well, with a token of the project up to a certain percentage of, like, let's say the token circulating supply. And when you do lock them up, then HAT tokens are farmed in the process. Now, when a hack happens, the point is that a hack doesn't happen, actually, because the hacker is incentivized to disclose a vulnerability and receive the prize locked in those vaults we just mentioned. So instead of being a black hat and going and exploiting the protocol and taking a huge legal risk, here you go. There's a pot of money there waiting for you to take if you come and disclose it and you don't basically break stuff and hack the projects. Another news item that caught my eye was that Starkware announced that their Starknet, which is their version of the ZK rollup scaling solution, now actually supports composability, which is super important. I mean, Ethereum kind of does that, but it's important for different smart contracts to be able to interact with each other. Now, they've actually published a very interesting blog post, and they are, in this blog post, they outline how the Starknet Alpha 2 allows them to advance from what they're calling the planet stage to the constellation stage, which is basically the composability stage. They mentioned that developers can expect an experience almost the same as Ethereum. Calls basically are synchronous and can be used as function calls between different smart contracts. They haven't done just that. They've also released a better testing framework, and this should actually expedite dApp development because developers will now be able to deploy and test interactions locally within their own PCs and their own infrastructure without any external dependencies, which is a huge benefit. They also say that they've improved Starknet's design to actually support higher throughput and from there shorter proof generation so that you end up having larger blocks that can be created at lower transactions per second. They also had a whole list of what they've been up to. So recently we saw that they've released standardized contracts after working together with Open Zeppelin. The Nevermind Warp team have demonstrated what we call a transpilation of an ERC-20 contract, which basically means you can take EVM bytecode, which is code running on Ethereum mainnet, and basically automatically transpose it to a Starknet contract. Apart from that, we also had a proposal submitted by the MakerDAO team to implement Maker protocol on Starknet. And they also say that the actual alpha mainnet is just around the corner, and they've actually gone the typical route of having a basically guarded launch where they gradually whitelist applications to kind of to make sure that there is no bugs, there is no issues. It's much easier to do that when it's a much smaller group of projects starting off. And over time, they expand it as they see that, you know, everything's working, the security is working. Now, coming on to the crazy world of NFT, what do we have this week?
Yep, this week we've got a lot of stuff as always. One of the cool things that I came across that actually just went down the other day was that PleaserDAO, the DAO that we've previously covered a couple times for, you know, their high profile collection of various artwork. You know, they've got like the Snowden NFT, the original Doge meme NFT, and a bunch of others. But they recently launched Dog Token, and this has to do with their Doge meme NFT that they purchased. So this token itself, the Dog Token, uses fractional.art, which basically allows users to fractionalize their NFTs. So if you don't know what that is, basically it means multiple people can own a portion of an NFT. So think, you know, a certain NFT has one holder, of course, but then if you fractionalize it, you could have 100 owners or 1,000 owners, and they all own just a small portion of that NFT. So that's what PleaserDAO did. They did it through the Miso platform by Sushi, basically allowing, you know, they had an auction for a portion of the NFT and they allowed anyone to get in on that. And then anyone who participated in the auction, you know, is now, of course, a fractional owner of the original Doge meme, which was launched as an NFT or auctioned as an NFT by the original creator. And it also came with some cool benefits, you know, like a fancy PoOP NFT, which we all know and love PoOP, as well as the ability to mint their own loot style NFTs for dogs, which was kind of fun. You know, instead of like the mystical items that we saw with loot, it was basically things like, you know, the dog breed and like other various dog related things on the list. So just kind of a fun thing to do. I'm not sure how much it took off or anything. And finally, dog holders, you know, the people who own that fractionalized NFT are going to be able to make decisions on the future of that, you know, NFT itself. And that, you know, the dog token itself is likely to be that voting token. I'm not sure if they're going to use Snapshot or a custom thing or whatever, but the dog token will be used to vote on the future of the NFT. And Jameis Johnson, the chief pleasing officer at PleaserDAO, says, "It's very much as if the Louvre decided to fractionalize the Mona Lisa and distribute a portion of it for the public to own. However, unlike at the Louvre, collective ownership of art is really only possible using crypto art." And it's true. I mean, you could not fractionalize the Mona Lisa without a pair of scissors, probably, and that would obviously destroy it. So just really cool to see this kind of thing happen in real time and get, you know, such traction and attention.
I love that whole concept, and I think we mentioned before, I think that's the future of ownership. And even with the Mona Lisa example, I mean, someone owns it, let's say, and I'm sure there's some kind of record of it somewhere that says, okay, person A owns the Mona Lisa. I don't know if it's the museum itself or the government, or I don't know who. Oh, probably not the government. But in any case, I mean, imagine you actually could issue it as an NFT. You know, that ownership can equate to an NFT, and then you could fractionalize it. There's no reason not to do it. The only reason you couldn't do it before is you didn't have this kind of blockchain technology and this concept of NFTs. Well, the concept of digital ownership and programmable ownership to be able to pull this off. But now you do. And now here are all the use cases. And I think it's inevitable that sooner or later, actual art, real like paintings will have an NFT to kind of tie the ownership of that piece, of that piece of art. You mentioned Pop, and we should mention that, you know, we love this project. It's a very popular NFT project that allows users to mint or receive an NFT for doing things like attending events, doing certain on-chain activities or different things. Well, they've actually just minted their 1 millionth Pop. So right now there's more than 1 million Pops out there. And the cool thing is that 1 millionth Pop was minted by Logic Beach, and he's been a longtime supporter and advocate for Pop. So that was cool to see. And yeah, I mean, we all, like, we know the team. They're a great team. And the growth at Pop that we've seen over the last couple of years has been very heartening. I mean, especially in the last 6 months, they really exploded in popularity. I have a hot wallet full of Pops from attending different hackathons, you know, and I really like to see them in my collection. And you've been involved in Pop as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Long-term collector. You know, it's always fun, like, going to conferences and stuff. You always have the people who are actually serious about Poops, which nowadays is, you know, way more people, pretty much everyone. And we're always, like, sharing off our collection or, like, getting Poops everywhere. And it's just always a good time. And, like, people take it very seriously. Like, you know, your typical Poop, it's not going to be worth, you know, $100 million, like some Beeple thing. But yet people want that. Like, there's, you know, for certain events, it's important, you know, like network upgrades for Ethereum and all sorts of stuff. And we've even seen, like, certain Poops being rewarded or, like, being used in all different projects and platforms depending on the Poop. So, yeah, longtime supporter, just love the project. And seriously, to see that they've hit 1 million NFTs or Poops minted, it's just absolutely crazy. And we do have some more NFT news, so I guess I'll just jump into that right away. We do have Andy Milonakis. So he is the washed up MTV star. Now, those are his words, not mine. You know, when I was younger, I'm mid-20s, so he was very relevant back then on TV and MTV and just kind of like a funny guy. And not so much nowadays, but he did recently launch his first NFT called Bitchfoot, which sold out in 20 seconds for one ETH. And that was like his first sale in, you know, it's one ETH, which to us, it might seem a little low compared to some of the NFTs that we've seen being sold. But this kind of led him on an NFT adventure. You know, it reminds me of like early days Fawocious, where like he sold his first NFT and was just like, this is amazing. Like, this is absolutely awesome. You know, Andy was just like going nuts. He did launch a collection of 15 NFTs on September 2nd, where these NFTs, like, they're over a decade old or 8 years or something. And basically he pulled old drawings and sketches from his website, which, like, he was able to get through archive.org and then he made for the website long ago. They looked like personal drawing sketches, but that's part of the collection and that's what he was auctioning off. And it seemed to be very popular. And, you know, since then, Andy's kind of just been on the NFT wave full force. He's even been poking fun at, like, the Loop Project. He posted a couple, like, of his own grocery shopping list, you know, as a Loot lookalike NFT picture on Twitter. So you can just see, like, random food that he's buying, and it looks like a Loot NFT. So just kind of funny and interesting, especially for me, who grew up with, you know, seeing Andy Milonakis here and there to be on the NFT wave, which... just interesting to see.
I mean, when I first saw that news item, I was kind of confused because, first of all, I haven't heard the name Andy Milonakis in so long. I remember, like, I must have been, I don't know what, like, it must have been like 20 years ago in the late, well, 2000s, I guess. And at first I thought, like, the news was about Andy Milonakis, the CTO of MakerDAO. And then I remember, okay, Andy Milonakis, there was a guy like that. And I think it was inevitable, right? Like, eventually all these people will somehow interact with NFTs one way or another. I think he wasn't even the only celebrity this week to join the NFT world, right?
Yeah. So we do have Reese Witherspoon, who actually tweeted about Ethereum. So not quite to NFTs yet, but, you know, seeing how we've seen it in the past, I'm assuming it wouldn't be long before maybe Reese jumps on the NFT bandwagon, but we'll see. But yeah, she basically just tweeted that she bought her first ETH. And of course, as we all know, crypto Twitter loves to go crazy anytime celebrities or famous people talk about NFTs or ETH. So it's just good to see. And, you know, it's definitely cool just to see that they like, I guess, tweet about it, just partly because, you know, they do have a big following. I guess it could be seen as negative if, like, oh, people might want to buy this just because their favorite celebrity bought this. But the way I think about it is that it might lead someone to be like, okay, what's this ETH? What's Ethereum? Similar to me years ago, I was like, what is this? And then I started looking into it. And then, you know, obviously I fell in love. I became so passionate about the technology and that kind of stuff. So I'm always open to celebrities tweeting about Ethereum, NFTs, whatever it may be, just because, you know, it can always lead the curious person to learning more and then joining us and being, you know, being someone who is just, you know, spending their days learning and building.
Yeah. I mean, I just, when I saw the name and crypto, I just automatically assumed the news must be about something to do with NFT, right? I mean, there's been so many stars come and interact with NFTs that, yeah, I completely forgot that actually, no, she's just bought ETH, which I think is even cooler. It just means she's looked a bit into the technology as well, I'm guessing, and decided, it's worth actually holding some ETH, which, yep, I think you don't need to convince Ethereans too hard that ETH is a great asset to hold.
And to finish off the NFT news for this week, even though, again, as I always say, we could probably make a whole episode dedicated just to it, but just about the general sentiment. So we did see profile pictures were previously like all the rage, all the hype, especially the generative ones. It seems to be kind of chilled out a little bit. You know, we have things like Bored Ape, still very relevant, but the floor has gone from like the 60 ETH peak down to, I think, nearly 40. So it seems to be cooling off just a little bit when it comes to like generative profile pictures. It might be because everyone right now is just distracted with loot and text-based NFTs, so who knows. OpenSea is still leading. They've got the most fees and burnt ETH by a long shot. There's over 12,000 ETH that was burnt by OpenSea the past 7 days, so the market is still alive, still going crazy. And a lot of hype and a lot of attention still being put into NFTs.
I mean, there's been a cool down, but I guess that's what, like a few days cool down, or it hasn't been more than a week, right? Maybe it's just something temporary. I mean, how do you see the market playing out for them? Do you think they'll recover eventually or soon?
It's hard to say. Like, I do think that, I mean, at the end of the day, some projects took advantage of the hype wave, I think, and then they never really had plans to build out or do stuff. So I think obviously those types of projects we're not really going to see do too well, maybe not recover. I don't want to say whether it will or it won't, but we do have, you know, obviously things like Bored Ape and Punks and just things that have like a huge community. And it's like, you know, they're always going to be going crazy. Not really speaking of just price wise, but I definitely think like, yeah, they'll still be full of energy. You know, the community is still going to be building stuff out and be super active. And, you know, I don't see that dying down anytime soon.
And lastly, we have actually some technical news, or more like an update. Tim Baker, who's like the coordinator of the calls, and he's involved in all this stuff, he just published a blog post that deep dives into the evolution of the roadmap for the ETH1 and ETH2 mergers. So we thought we'd just cover it and bring you up to date with what's happening. Now, just a bit of background for those of you who aren't familiar. The merge is what happens when we're going to kind of swap out Ethereum's current proof of work consensus algorithm, which is what Bitcoin uses, and we know it's pretty bad for the environment. It might not be as efficient. And we're going to take that out and we're going to swap it with the proof of stake consensus algorithm that was deployed on the Beacon chain, or let's say on ETH2 phase zero last December. So that part will actually be what is the beating heart of Ethereum that we know today as mainnet. So this blog post was very interesting. It basically covers the pre-merge history, including what the early merge ideas was, how we focused on a roll-up-centric roadmap, its impact, and the launch of the Beacon Chain. And obviously, the blog post covers what the current and future roadmap for Ethereum and ETH2 is. Some pillars, actually, that you know we should be aware of and are important for the future merger are basically four things. First of all, the Beacon Chain is live, as we mentioned, and it can be used as a consensus engine. Second, that rollups are the best short-term solution for scaling computation. And third, the current ETH1 clients form the best basis for the execution layer post-merge, and we'll get to that in a bit. And the move to proof of stake, importantly, can be run with minimal impact on the currently running applications. And one big change from the original proposal is that instead of having the current EVM basically be a shard on its own, it will actually be coupled to the Beacon Chain directly. Now, I don't know this regarding the ETH1 clients, but they are already built in a way where the consensus algorithm can be swapped. So basically, a good example of this is like mainnet uses proof of work, but many testnets and private Ethereum networks use something completely different. They might be using these other different proof of authority consensus algorithms, IBFT, any different ones. So that's very good that it's very swappable in that sense. And that's basically the idea behind the ETH1 and ETH2 merge. We will simply switch the ETH1 proof of work algorithm with the Beacon Chain's proof of stake. And this approach basically has the benefit of minimizing the work that client teams on the proof of work side need to do while still delivering the benefits of an early merge and an early roll-up-centric roadmap. Now, importantly, we also had that one month-long hackathon that we mentioned, I think maybe 3-4 months ago, called Rayanism. And there they had already validated this idea, this executable Beacon Chain architecture is, yes, it is viable, it can be done. Now, there's still a lot to do until this merge. There's still the finalizing of the post-merge sync protocols. There's the setting up of the integration testnets for the entire process. There's launching devnets. But overall, we are super happy and overall, we are super excited and we're really looking forward to that. It's going to be another catalyst maybe for ETH to capture even more value, but it's going to be definitely more efficient, more scalable. And it's what we've all been dreaming of. You know, we all knew that ETH1 had its limitations and slowly we've been unlocking new capacity and new capabilities. So there you have it, everyone. Another very eventful week is behind us. As always, thank you for listening to us and until we catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.